When it comes to the quality of a genetic test, the most important aspect to consider is patient care. At Blueprint Genetics, patients come first. In order for a test to be considered high quality, it should provide valuable information for the patient. That's why Blueprint Genetics is focused on prioritizing quality and delivering answers to patients and their families. To dive deeper, check out episode 209 for our full interview with Blueprint Genetics, where we explored the aspects of a quality genetic test. You can also check out their website at blueprintgenetics.com.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity? Such elegance.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a multi-award-winning podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research. For a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics in over 200 episodes. For the past 3 years, DNA Today has won the Best Science in Medicine Podcast Award. I'm Kira Deneen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. In this episode, we're recapping and reflecting on the National Society of Genetic Counselors' 41st Annual Conference, which was just held in Nashville. Some attendees joined in virtually, and others, like myself, joined in person. Enjoy our thoughts on the conference and what we learned. I also want to thank every listener who came up to me during the conference. It was really cool to meet many of you. This podcast can feel one-sided, and it was refreshing to be able to connect in person. I'm already looking forward to the next NSGC in Chicago in October. If we didn't get to connect this year, email me, info@dnatoday.com. Would love to hear from you and add you to our email newsletter list. Oh, and don't forget to enter our giveaway from last episode for one of 5 copies of The Genome Defense. I really enjoyed this book, as you could probably tell how hard I nerded out during the interview. You can enter on our social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all newly at DNA Today Podcast. That's at DNA Today Podcast. Look for the picture of me sticking my head out of reading the book. We have lots of giveaways, so you don't want to miss, so make sure you follow us there. I am honored to be with the recipient of the Heart of Genetic Counseling Award. I was just so excited when you won this. I was like so happy to be even at the dinner. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I know her. And you guys were like, who is it if you didn't go to NSGC? Monisha Sebastian, who is a pediatric cardio and immunogenetic counselor local to me in New York. So you did a fantastic presentation Thursday morning. So it was like, it was the first thing I attended. Mm-hmm. You and some colleagues presented on the experience of international GCs. Tell me about the survey that you were part of conducting. What did you learn from it?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kira, for giving me this opportunity. So this survey, it was inspired based on my experience and experience of fellow international genetic counselors that I've mentored over the years. And the theme that I was experiencing was there was not a lot of awareness of what was happening. So we wanted to, my co-lead on the study, Tanaya Sharaf, and I, we wanted to see, is this just the experience of the selected few we are in contact with, or is this the overarching theme? Mm-hmm. And so we sent this survey out to assess the different aspects of being an international in the US in the field of genetic counseling. And what we learned from this survey was surprisingly what we've been experiencing or hearing from other international genetic counselors we've seen over the years. And we highlighted the preliminary data from that study in our talk.
And I was really, like, sadly surprised that 1 in 3 students reported they did not feel supported by their genetic counseling program. And I think when you were talking about this, it was focused on, okay, how are grad programs supporting, like, in the job search mostly, but there was also other components to that. Were you surprised by this? Because I've certainly heard this from people that graduated from my class and others that it was a frustrating aspect in general. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, focus on the grad program side. Is that something that, yeah, you were surprised by, or other factors around that?
I was definitely surprised by the number of people who agreed with that statement, or who the 1/3 that we showed on the data. But am I surprised that they felt that way? Not really, but the numbers were a bit of a surprise, because I was thinking in this day and age, maybe things would have changed. You know, I graduated 5 years ago, and I thought in the 5 years that would have been more awareness and more support.
And just in general, more international students.
Exactly.
I think I don't personally know your year. I mean, I probably know other people, but I think I know you mm-hmm. the closest. But there were, I feel like, more international students, like, over time. Being in New York, like, we do tend to attract people that are international, including Canadians. Exactly. I think that's something to, you know, highlight, that sometimes we're looking at further from the U.S., mm-hmm. but Canadians are experiencing a lot of the same or similar issues that people yeah. from India and other countries like your background are from.
Which was very surprising, because TN, or the visa that the Canadians and Mexicans need, is relatively easier than the rest of the countries. And to see Canadians and Mexicans respond the same way or similar to what the rest of the cohort was responding was definitely surprising.
You would think by now, because especially for certain schools like the New York schools, I'm guessing so many where like you're bordering Canada, mm-hmm. where you have so many students applying to those schools as well as the Canadian schools, because it is so competitive to get into the Canadian schools. We just have more spots available in the United States, so a lot of people end up traveling from Canada. So you'd think these genetic counseling grad programs would have things in place to be like, this is how we can support you. And there certainly, I know, at programs, there is an appointed person to help with different challenges that international students face, that international students face, that domestic students don't face. Talking about, like, I'm kind of highlighting the visa sponsorship, because that's from friends of mine. That's been the most stressful part that I hear from, especially in the COVID years. So people that graduated, I was class of 2020, so me and everybody under me. And from the study you guys did, 80% of respondents felt that visa sponsorship made it harder to find or secure a job. Expanding upon, we've talked about how grad schools, we feel many of them could do a better job at supporting. But let's span out from there. So how can institutions in general that are hiring us genetic counselors, along with grad schools and other organizations, help to address this and make it more of this is the easy process, as opposed to what I've heard from a lot of genetic counselors is I'm educating the HR director or whoever how to do this, and like sometimes it might be more involved than others. How can we just make this a more streamlined process, because it should be normalized?
Yeah, so I think it's like genetic counselors who are in the leadership role, who have a voice in making a change, who can step in and provide the HR team or their team with resources. And again, I think this is not something that the programs have control over, because like we mentioned in our resources on the ISIG, as well as in our talk, immigration is not what we're focusing on. Immigration is beyond anyone's control. What the community of the International Genetic Counselors is asking for is support and allyship. We want individuals to understand do not bucket us in the same bucket as those from the domestic, because they do not have the extra challenge of going through these hoops of employers rejecting your application.
You can go all the way to the end of an interview process, be offered a job, and then they're like, hold on, you need visa sponsorship?
Yeah. And there are also some centers where you apply and you get immediate rejection, because they have this set up in such a way you answer the question about sponsorship, your application is rejected. And to answer your question about how can we support these institutions, a lot of these institutions find it overwhelming. They think immigration or like sponsorship is a tedious process. They do not know how to go about with it, or their policies deny, their institutional policies refuse them to hire. That's a different story. That is something we cannot tackle. In those instances, it would make more sense for them to be transparent about it. Just as how New York now requires you to give a salary range, maybe just mention if you take internationals, if you sponsor visas. And for those who are trying to set this up for their international colleagues, there are resources available with the International SIG on how you can help make the institution or your hiring manager understand what the process entails. It's not that hard. Like I said, it's just it can come across intimidating and prevent one from even trying.
Which is what we really want to avoid, because we hate to lose such talented genetic counselors that have come to America for this schooling, because we do have, as far as I'm aware, the most grad school and programs compared to any other country, that certainly some people want to go back home to different countries or end up being in a different country to bring genetic counseling there, which is awesome. We've highlighted that on the show for a while. Shanila Lakhani is one that we've highlighted. Oh my gosh, I love her so much.
She's one of I would say she's someone I look up to. And
same.
Very, very close.
Yeah, mentor. Yeah. So, I mean, and she, I'll have to reference, go to the show notes. I'll link the episode to that. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. But I think it's so important that it does not to be as need to be as hard as it has been for people. We are an established field. I think sometimes, yeah, it's fun to say we're a new field. But in these cases, maybe we should stop that language so that, you know, people understand that we're an established field. We're very needed. Your Twitter account is NSGCISIG, S-I-G. Uh-huh. Again, that's in the show notes for this episode at dnatoday.com. Any other resources? I mean, I'm just going to go through the Twitter and find other resources, but anything else to end with?
Absolutely. So with respect to students, what students need is if you have a cohort with other international students, yes, they're going to have the support. But again, they are with individuals who have a similar experience, so they do not know how to go about. How about connecting them with your alumni who are internationals, or reach out to the international SIG and ask for a mentor. We have established a mentor-mentee program to help with all these experiences that students have, prospective students, students in the graduate program. And we're also looking into developing a mentorship program for the colleagues in the GC field. But irrespective of whether you're part of the program or not, all of us know what it is to be in the shoes of an international. Just send us an email or reach out to us through social media.
Yep, you can tweet them.
Absolutely. You can tweet us. You can reach out to us by email. And we are more than happy to just hear you out. As a student, that was what I wanted. And I have to give a shout out to my classmates. They were a huge support to me, although they did not understand what
So probably more of an emotional support, it sounds
exactly.
like, which more, is also important.
Which is important, exactly. But it also takes a different level of support when you know that someone's been through this. You're going to be fine. You will get to the other side. And these are the things you need to think about when you're applying. Please, program directors, students, or even managers, if you do not have an experience with this, but you want to be a resource or you want to help your colleagues, reach out to us, ask us for resources, and we will be your support. One concrete step that program directors can take is to speak with their international office to see how the international students are currently supported and if there are any changes that are needed in their structure. And one of the best ways to support is if a program doesn't have STEM extension, which is the one that was established a few years ago, working on that and getting STEM extension would be the most ideal support that an international office can offer.
And they can reach out to you guys directly if they have questions about that or don't have that in place yet or not sure how to do that.
Absolutely. We are more than happy to help them out on that.
You'd probably be so excited if you got the email.
Oh, totally. We would love that. That's exactly what we want.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's just such an incredible resource for people to take advantage of in all the roles that you mentioned. And I just have to say, congratulations. Huge accomplishment to win the Heart of Genetic Counseling Award. I mean, it's like, you know, you're just doing such a phenomenal job, and we'll have to have you back on at some point to talk about just how awesome a genetic counselor you are, because certainly this is part of being a genetic counselor, but this is a little, you know, outside of the scope of your everyday practice.
Exactly. I want to give a shout out to my co-presenters and co-chairs of the International SIG, Smita, Arpita, and Rachel. Thank you so much for joining on this venture to advocate for fellow international genetic counselors.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really cool that we were able to actually talk and highlight your role and everything. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kira. This is such an honor. And thank you so much for giving a voice and this platform to hear about the international genetic counselors' experience. We appreciate it. The International SIG members, we absolutely appreciate this. Thank you.
First of many conversations, you know, with this newer SIG
exactly.
and everything.
Yeah, yes. That's how we see it.
And I hope you guys have all enjoyed this country music in the background, just to add to the Nashville vibe. So I pulled off to the side of the exhibit hall. I'm talking with one of my former classmates, Gabby. Welcome to DNA Today. So you work at Geisinger. Tell us a little bit about your role at Geisinger, and then I want to hear about your impression of the conference and how it's been going for you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kira. I do work for Geisinger. I'm a cancer genetic counselor there. I've been a cancer GC for a little over 2 years, about 2.5 years. I do a little bit of research on our MyCode project as well, another cancer-focused project called Detect, and a whole slew of other things, but most of my time is split between clinic and research. Loved the conference so far. I've been sitting in a lot of different lectures, learning a lot of new things. One of the biggest takeaways thus far are our updates to our NCCN NCCN guidelines. There's something that's always changing, and it's always good to hear everyone's perspective on the guidelines, because again, we use them to try to make best decisions for our patients, but at the end of the day, you know, they are just guidelines. So if we still feel like testing's indicated, we're always making those clinical judgment calls when we're meeting with patients.
And you were telling me before, when we were just like walking around, that the NCCN guidelines are updated pretty frequently. Like, I feel like in prenatal, like, our ACOG guidelines are updated not as often, or maybe someone's gonna email me and be like, you've been missing out on updates pretty frequently. You really have to stay on top of it when you're in cancer.
That's true. So usually it's every couple of months. It can be for minimal updates, but usually once a year, every year they update the guidelines pretty heavily. This year, a big update with our breast guidelines are now any woman diagnosed with breast cancer at age 50 or younger meets testing criteria, which
is... So that's different from 45, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So that's definitely a big, huge update. Anyone with colon cancer at any age now meets guidelines for testing. So
that's shocking. I'm learning this in the moment, real time.
So those are just two of the big ones that I could think of off the top of my head. Pretty significant updates this year, but it's just nice to hear from the overall genetics community here at NSGC, you know, what the impact has been for them since these guidelines have changed and where we're going in the future. You know, will guidelines be detrimental to our profession in the future still, or, you know, are we kind of leaning more towards away from those guidelines? And are we just, anyone diagnosed with a personal history of cancer, regardless of what it is, if they want testing, we'll order it, you know? So I think that's definitely up for debate, still in the early stages, but good stuff.
It's a lot, as you said, to keep up with, and it's not just our field of genetic counselors using these guidelines. It's a lot more people, which I was kind of realizing as you were saying that. It's like, you know, how is it future updates going to affect us? Because this is for cancer, oncology in general. But so great to just hear about your thoughts from the conference. And I think a lot of people have just been saying, so great after 3 years to be back in person, because that was when we were second years. It was our first year doing NSGC and we're finally back.
Right. Absolutely. It's so good to see everyone, not only the Sarah Lawrence College community, but just everyone from all programs, colleagues. So it's so good to be here in person.
Yes. Well, thank you. And so great seeing you, Gabby.
You too. Great seeing you.
How do you define a quality genetic test? As we know, genetic tests are not created equal. Different labs prioritize different aspects of testing. Blueprint Genetics has a patient-first mission. Giving a patient a result can help lead to better care. Blueprint Genetics has a team of people dedicated to sifting through this complex information so that the results are thoroughly supported. With Blueprint, having human eyes on the data can help ensure that it's valid. For patients that have been on the diagnostic odyssey for years, which we explore extensively on this show, having a pathogenic variant identified, previously missed by other labs, can be life-changing. I also recommend checking out episode 209, where I interview Blueprint Genetics about aspects of quality genetic testing. Episode 184 is another great one where Blueprint Genetics experts shared their insight about inherited retinal disorders. Links to these are in the show notes for easy access. You can also learn more at blueprintgenetics.com. Again, that's blueprintgenetics.com.
So I'm catching up with Gabrielle Ernst after her lovely presentation. What was the panel called?
So the panel was surrounding gender, intersex identities, sexuality, disability, and how those different identities intersect. And we had a great panel of individuals who came together to talk about their thesis research that they have continued in different ways after graduate school and now into their genetic counseling careers.
Beautiful. I put you on the spot there because I couldn't remember the name of the panel. But there was great presentations. And as I was sitting in the audience, I got so excited because I was like, wait, I was a participant for the study that you were sharing in the workshop. So to jump into it, what is Amplify Sprouted? Can you give us some background on this?
Yes. So Amplify Sprouted was actually originally Amplify. Amplify was created by Nicole Huser, and it is an educational tool and a workshop focused on teaching genetic counselors about gender-affirming care and how to be inclusive providers. And so I had the pleasure and honor of taking her work and evolving it to the prenatal preconception genetic counseling specialty. So Amplify is designed to be two parts, being the first educational portion, a series of five modules broken down into different components of, you know, understanding terminology, population disparities, communication, what somebody's gender affirmation process may look like, focusing on fertility and family planning, and then how to implement that in a genetic counseling session. And then the workshop, the second part of Amplify Sprouted, was bringing together genetic counselors and trans and gender diverse individuals to go through a series of role plays and allow them to have a space where they can get feedback from the individuals they are helping and from people who can give that feedback of how to be an inclusive provider based on their personal lived experience.
And it's so needed in the field. I think a lot of people coming from grad schools, we both went to genetic counseling grad school, and we don't have this taught in programs as much as I would like, or in some programs, I don't think they really cover it at all. This is just so important. And as a participant in the survey and then the workshop, I mean, I learned so much. And going into it, I was like, well, I probably know a little bit more than like the general person as a queer person myself. So kind of, you know, adjacent to, you know, talking about people that are not cis in terms of their gender. So I wanted to just start by asking you, throughout this process, what did you learn from people who participated that are coming from the trans, non-binary, genderqueer, gender diverse community?
Oh my gosh. I mean,
we could go on forever. So I'm like, okay, what's a couple things you learned?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, they are incredible people. And this project was with their lived experience, their voices, amplifying their voices. That's really where Nicole kind of came up with Amplify. We are amplifying this group of individuals, their voices. And I learned so much about other parts of a session or other parts of the clinic, to how to be more inclusive, how to use different language, how to push boundaries based on societal constructs. I have learned even when I had meetings with them, they would correct language I would say to be more inclusive as a human being overall. And I was beyond thankful for them. And I always tried to create a space of, you know, I am learning just as much and I want to learn from you all. So please, I want to create a space that I appreciate any tips, ways that I can adjust what I'm doing, what I'm saying. To say that I learned a lot from them is an understatement, and continue to learn from them, and beyond thankful that they were so excited about this research, wanted to be involved in this work, and continue to be involved in the work that we're doing. And I hope to have them still a part of it as we move forward in different contexts too.
There's just so much that I learned from it. Part of the workshop was doing a role play. So everybody got paired up. So genetic counselor was paired with a community member. And so we were able to go through a role play. I'm a prenatal genetic counselor, so that's what I did. And I was paired with Holden Bender Bernstein. And I have to say, I'm a huge fan of his. He's just so amazing. He was actually on an episode of DNA Today, episode 190, and did a beautiful job of just, you know, sharing so much about his lived experience and what we should be aware of in genetic counseling. Taking the workshop, it really gave me the push of, let me bring it up higher on my to-do list of updating our forms at my private practice that I work at to include pronouns, update some of the options for sex, to have things like assigned female at birth, assigned male at birth, and other options as well. And then gender is a separate question, and pronouns. It was just so great to be able to have that on there, that I have that information before I get that patient from the waiting room. And there's just so much that as I went through the role play, certain things that Holden was like, you did this really well. And I felt very affirmed in the way that I was doing that. And Holden pointed out that on my visual aids, I had normal female karyotype. And he was like, I felt a little weird about that. I'm like, thank you so much for pointing that out, because that didn't occur to me. So even someone where I feel like I've been very exposed to the community and active in the community, but there's still things to learn. And that's one of the themes for you, is continuous learning with this. I would love to see this implemented in so many more ways, because I know this was a soft launch of going through this. How do you see and hope that this is going to be implemented in other ways, other places, organizations, institutions? I mean, sky's the limit, but how do you see and hope that to work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Nicole and I are continuing to work in this space with our awesome team, with the trans and gender diverse individuals who have been a part of this project. We are in the process of publishing our methodology, our data from the workshop, and hope that that becomes something well seen and known in the genetic counseling community and beyond. But we really hope to implement Amplify and Amplify Sprouted, specifically the educational tool portions, into genetic counseling programs, into, you know, just the genetic counseling community. It's accessible to genetics providers, to genetic counseling students through links where they can go in, and we hope to continue to update this information. I mean, as we've talked about, there is always more to learn. There is new terminology, new ways to say things in the most affirming, inclusive way possible. There is new publications that are coming out. There are medical experts who are continuing to learn just about, you know, this space with prenatal preconception genetics. And so I think, you know, our goal is to not only publish this paper, but to continue the work. We hope that, you know, maybe another genetic counseling student will come along and want to continue this as another project as well, in whatever form feels best for them, but also really implementing Amplify and Amplify Sprouted into the community of genetics professionals and genetic counselors that we have now, so that this becomes, you know, learned information across the board and we can update it over time as well.
Well, I think that's beautifully said, and I really look forward to seeing, as you were talking about, how this is going to advance and grow and being able to amplify and sprouted. So I'm sure we'll be catching up in the future and having you back on the show to say this is what it is now. And you also had links up at the end of your presentation. We'll include those links in the show notes to this episode, also available at dnatoday.com. A lot of those we can also, I think, maybe provide the password for that with it. But if not, you guys can email me info@dnatoday.com and I'll either be able to provide that for you or connect you with Gabrielle. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Kira. It was great to finally meet you too.
So I'm catching up with Ashlyn Enochian, who is a prenatal genetic counselor in Las Vegas, so very similar to what I do, but she sees a lot more patients than I do. We just got out of the Sunday morning lectures. I wanted to hear your thoughts because both of the lectures we attended were focused on prenatal. What were you learning from these sessions? Was there anything that was surprising?
I was pretty blown away by the talk we attended this morning on trisomy 13 and 18. It was so eye-opening to really hear about these conditions as a spectrum in severity, in the terms of like calling it life-limiting, shifting away from like a lethal genetic condition, which is especially, I mean, we've only been practicing a few years, but there was so much emphasis on lethality when we talked about it in school and our education, and even when I was training, you know, in my position. One of the most impressive things that they talked about, and one of the stats they used, is that of the patients that survived to discharge with these conditions, the median survival for non-mosaic trisomy 18 and 13 patients was 14 and a half years.
Which is insane. Like, when I saw that stat, I'm like, I must be reading it wrong or heard it wrong.
Right.
But again, so this is patients that are being discharged. So they made it through birth,
neonatal period.
Once they're discharged and they're going home with their families, the median age is 14 and a half years. That might be the most surprising statistic that I learned at the conference. Like, you could feel it in the room because it was filled with like mostly prenatal genetic counselors and students that want to go into the field. And
right. There was like this pause, there was this silence where we all were like catching our breath because we were all realizing, how do we talk about this with patients almost every day?
I think everybody left there being like, I need to rework how I talk about trisomy 13 and 18. Like, for us, mostly like NIPS results. I mean, obviously things come up on ultrasound. It depends where you work in the country. If you're based in America, even us, we have so different patient populations. Mm-hmm. For me, most of the time I have NIPS results that I'm counseling on, and then we're looking, are there also ultrasound findings? Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's reverse, or it's just ultrasound. So I think there's just so much that we have to take in with that.
Yeah, and I thought it was even more surprising that when they presented this data to us, it looked like the cases that they had used for those stats and for that paper were reviewed from 1982 to 2008. So these are not even recent numbers. I mean, we probably, especially with all advances we do like every year in genetics and medical intervention, can only imagine if this has shifted, if this median age has shifted.
Oh, it must have had, because you're thinking about, if I'm doing my math right, so the end of that block of time, 2008, like that's when Obama came into office. Like, so that's 14 years ago. Right. I'm like, so for people like thinking about timeline, 2008, that's 14 years ago. I mean, 14 years is so long in genetics. Mm-hmm. Like, I was in eighth grade. Right. Just aging myself casually. But I mean, that is just shocking. I would love to see an updated study from this, of looking at cases that include from 1982 through 2021 or something, because it's hard to get data from this year if people are doing this research. Mm-hmm. Also wanted to congratulate you on GC Genius. So you and your business partner, Natasha Lilly, created these amazing board study guides, which can be used throughout grad school. It's really useful for board study, but you both went through boards and wish you had something like that. And so you just launched the flashcards, the note cards of the top 100 genetic conditions for people to really know for boards. And within, 24 hours, you guys sold out. So
So we just want to say thank you for the overwhelming support we've had both at the conference and virtually. And we will be working on restocking our shop. And, you know, there's much to look forward to in the future. future regarding GC Genius Guides. And a big thank you for having us on too.
And once you guys restock, we'll let our audience know. They do still have the workbook. So that is, you can use code DNA today for that. And then the bundle is the note cards and the workbook, or you could buy the note cards separately. But the note cards, you guys are going to have to order more because demand is there. So congratulations. That's such a good feeling. And I think just both of us have spent so much time networking. Now we have to go home and watch all the lectures we missed after 3 years of not being in person with our genetic counseling community. It's just, I don't know if you're feeling it, but I'm just like, yeah, actually being able to meet people that I've met in the past 3 years and being like, that's you from Twitter.
Yeah. I just feel so re-inspired. Yeah. After quite a long break. So
yeah,
so
I can totally agree with that. But thanks for coming on yet again, Ashlyn Anokian. So I think you've been on every NSGC recap. Maybe you missed one, maybe. But anyway, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnapodcast.com, where you can also stream all episodes of the show. We encourage your questions, comments, guest pitches, and ideas. Send them all into info@dnapodcast.com. Search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so you can connect with us there. And a favor, please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. DNA Today is hosted and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our social media lead is Corinne Merlino. Our video lead is Amanda Andrioli. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.